Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of May, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we have something new for you today. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes...
The news.
All right. Apple and Google have released long-awaited smartphone technology to automatically notify people if they might have been exposed to the coronavirus. The companies had announced the unprecedented collaboration to leverage their technology to help trace and contain the spread of coronavirus last month, and say 22 countries and several U.S. states have already planned are already planning to build voluntary phone apps using their software.
It's time.
The software relies on Bluetooth wireless technology to detect when someone who downloaded the app has spent time near another app user who later tests positive for the virus. Many governments have already tried, mostly unsuccessfully, to roll out their own phone apps to fight the spread of the Corona 19 pandemic. Many of those apps have encountered technical problems on Apple and Android phones and haven't been widely adopted. They often use GPS to track people's location, which Apple and Google are omitting from their new tool because of privacy and accuracy concerns. Public health agencies in 22 countries, as well as the states of Alabama, North Dakota, and South Carolina, have been waiting to use the Apple-Google model, while other governments have said that the tech giant's privacy restrictions will be a hindrance because public health workers will have no access to the data. Apple and Google said they're not trying to replace contact tracing, a pillar of infection control that involves tracing public health workers reaching out to people who may have been exposed to an infected person. But they say their automatic exposure notification system can augment that process and slow the spread of COVID-19 by virus carriers who are interacting with strangers and aren't yet showing symptoms. The identity of app users will be protected by encryption and anonymous identifier beacons that change frequently. The software will be downloaded on most Android phones and iPhone models released since September 2015. User adoption is key to success, and we believe that these strong privacy protections are also the best way to encourage use of these apps, the company said in a joint statement on Wednesday. The company said the new technology, the product of a rare partnership between rival tech giants, solves some of the main technical challenges that governments have had in building Bluetooth-based apps. It will make it easier for iPhones and Android phones to detect each other, work across national and regional borders, and fix some of the problems that led previous apps to quickly drain a phone's battery. So our poll of the week at Soundbites, thank you, .org. Oh, you think I should plug this in?
You might need that.
Yeah, I might. At soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple and Google are adding contact tracing to their phones. I misspelled that, I see. To their phones. And your choices are, I can't wait. I'll check it out. Why not? They're already tracking me. Never! And, of course, others. So far, we have 114 votes on the thing. And do we? I have 114 votes. Hold on.
Double check.
That's weird.
Refresh.
116 votes.
Right.
So far, 93% of you have said never. This does not bode particularly well for the use of this product.
Well, how many people already have Google tracking on?
Well, yeah, but this is different.
And may not realize it.
Right. But this is different. So 93% of you. And that's from several places in the United States. So you can vote at our site. But you'll have more to say, particularly if you said other. You can go to our website, soundbites.org, as I said. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. And hello, hi, how are you? And what happened to it? No, there it is. It is there. Okay. Wow. Under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 23 May 20. Apple and Google are adding contact tracing to their phones. This is something that is controversial at best, because people will be you know,
paranoid,
and believe they are being tracked.
You do have to manually download the app and manually opt in. So there is.
But the other thing, though, that a lot of folks don't realize, though, so they don't turn it on their phone. There are so many cameras where you drive around, and even without your permission, they can sit there and focus in on your license plate.
Because you're in public.
Yeah. Right. And they could track wherever you go that way. So, right. You know what? If you're not doing anything illegal, what difference does it make?
Well, some people prefer that their privacy not be impinged in any way.
Well, that's been gone for a while. Yeah, Get over it.
Right.
Just because it's not illegal doesn't mean I want people looking in my room or whatever.
Well, right. Like they said, illegal is a sick bird. Unlawful.
Yeah.
Right. But the fact is that a lot of people don't want it. And the good thing is that you can say no. Just say no. You are allowed to. Hi, how are you? You're allowed to turn it off. So. Or rather, not turn it on, and so that's okay. But the reality is that right now, at least, it's a really kind of lovely idea to be able to handle that and to help people out and stuff like that. So,
well, speaking of that, though, I have one friend that was worried because of all her friends on, say, her phone and all that. She sent out this warning. If you're going to download and put that app on, I am demanding that you first erase my number from the phone because I do not want to be part of that. And it's like, you know what? With all the things going on right now in life, choose your battles differently.
Yeah, exactly. There are really...
They're just trying to gather data.
Right. In this particular case... Normally, I'm not a big fan of being tracked.
Yeah.
In this particular case, I don't mind. Because if somebody, it's completely selfish. If somebody I've come in contact with tests positive for COVID-19, I would like to know that, thank you.
You and me both. Especially me right now with my wife and her condition. Right. I mean, she's got a very compromised immune system. And, that's why I go ahead and wear the mask because I can't bring anything back that, might possibly infect her because that would be a death sentence at this point.
Yeah, it really would. And you have to be extra careful, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one way to do it.
Yeah.
So for you, it's actually a safety and health issue, which it is really for everybody.
It is everybody because, I'm sorry, one, they thought kids and young adults were immune. Well, now all of a sudden you got all these other little kids, 5-6 years old, dying because it's another like strain of that virus. Yep. And it's killing them. Now all of a sudden they're finding kids anywhere from, I think it was 16 to 25. They come up with a whole nother set of symptoms.
Right.
So all these kids gathering on the beaches, we're immune. No, you're not.
No, you're not.
Just finds a different strain and a different way to attack your immune system. It's just like all these other flus that come out. It's just another strain of that.
Except this one's a little more deadly.
Yeah.
Right.
We've had a couple of people complaining.
Before you say, sorry, I just want to tell you, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, in our store, we've had a couple of people complaining that we're making them wear masks in the store, and we're trying to cut down on the number of people in the store. We have people complain about wearing a mask. you're infringing on my rights. No, you're infringing on my right not to get sick.
No shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service.
Yep. Right.
Done.
And then we had one person complain that the store was empty. Why can't you work on my phone right now? Because there's 50 phones ahead of you in the back that we don't have in this people in the store.
Right. We're taking your phones and then asking you to leave so that you are safe and we are safe.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were talking about this before. People thinking that they're, you know, they can walk into it and say, you come into my store.
Yeah.
And I'm selling product ABC. And you come in and I got that sign right up front that says, you know, hey, no shirt, no, you know, whatever, no right. shoes and all this, no mask, you don't get served. And come in and then start giving me attitude. No, I have a right to demand that you do wear it, or otherwise, go take your business elsewhere.
It's exactly the same situation. These are the same people who say, well, these folks are perfectly within their rights to refuse to make a wedding cake for gay people. Okay, if that's true, then I have a perfect right to tell you to wear a mask in my store or get out.
Yep.
Done. There's no difference there. Except that...
You're inconveniencing them.
You're inconveniencing them, not yeah. somebody else. Right, right, right. So, yeah, I get it. People are...
They think they're entitled to do whatever they want because now it's been lifted, so they can just go about doing whatever they want. And I'm sorry, these stores got to keep... Just because you walk into one, the other folks that might come in after you, and if you've been coughing, they're going to get sick. So it's just not just this one customer. A store owner has to think of all the customers coming in and protect all of them, not just yep. you as you walk in the door. You're just one. There's hundreds of others that still want to come in here, and you got to protect them too.
Yeah, yeah.
You see people complaining about, well, they didn't have these kind of restrictions back in the last pandemic. No, and
they didn't know as
tens,
much.
Of people died.
Tens of millions of people died, yeah. yes. Right. If you're okay with that, no, it's okay for someone else to die, but it's not okay for them to die.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, well, we're not going to solve the problems of the world, but maybe no. we can solve your problems. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, just like Andy did from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, guys. Last few weeks, maybe the last month, you've been having discussions with people about converting over to Linux.
Sure.
And I had a laptop that I was repurposing, and we'd replaced it, and I decided to bite the bullet and try it because I've been thinking about it and procrastinating forever, kind of like the way you do. And so I went for it, and I just wanted to share my experience so that if other people are thinking about it, they can find out that this isn't as bad as they think. I looked at all the commands for downloading, decided for $7.98 I'd buy the disk because it just was easier.
Sure.
I got it within 3 days. U.S. mail, came with a utility disk. I said, okay, this isn't bad. Made sure, double-checked I backed everything up and took off all the old data and, you know, had it in a safe place. The hardest part of it was agreeing to format the hard drive.
Yeah, right, right. There's that moment where you think,
do I have enough
backups? You teach yourself not to do that for so many years and then to sit there. And even though you know you backed it up, there's this little voice in the back. Did you get everything? Oh, no.
Right, right. And Steve is right. Your immediate impulse is, oh, well, one more backup.
Yeah. So, anyhow, I hit the button. It took, I think, less than 30 minutes. It cleaned out the hard drive, installed itself. I went through it. This thing not only put in the operating system, it put in LibreOffice, Firefox, and Thunderbird.
Yeah.
Yeah, so mail, web, up, and photos, everything you need.
You've got your operating system, you've got an office system, you've got your browser, and you've got an email client.
Yeah.
And it's all on the disk, you got to put in a password and all that other good stuff, but this is nothing you haven't done before, so it's pretty painless. The only thing I had to work at and put any effort into, other than that initial install, was I needed to be able to, well, in Windows World, you call it map a hard drive. In Linux, they call it mount a hard drive.
Right.
Which is referring back to the old days when you had to put tape on the machine kind of thing. Right. I get that. But I did a little searching around because I started reading the commands. And you start looking at Linux commands, and the first thought in your mind is, you go to the movie quotes, "We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto."
Right.
And then you go Disney, and it's a whole new world. But I found a program called Gigolo, G-A-G-O-L-O. It's free. You download that, install it, and mapping the hard drive becomes nothing more than knowing what the path is. And beyond that, it's done.
Right.
It was fast. It was clean. It was smooth. The thing works amazingly. So if you're at a point where you've decided you want to move away from Windows, but you want to get something that's going to be relatively familiar, at least as far as layout and stuff like that goes, you can't. I haven't found any reason that you would be going wrong with Linux Mint. It really is a nice clean install. The menu system is. It's not identical to Windows, but it's all in the right places, and you click the little icon, and it comes up and gives you everything you're used to seeing.
The icons are blue, not yellow.
You're right.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's thank you, Andy. That's absolutely right. There are a couple of little pieces that are, you have to know the trick, how to install the new stuff. You go to the software menu instead of the Microsoft Store. You can install them from there. Everything you would want to do, you can do, often with a different program, often with the same program. So you've got Thunderbird. You know, you have Thunderbird in Windows, you have Thunderbird in Linux. You can install an Office suite, even though it's not Microsoft's Office suite. It works 99% the same.
Got LibreOffice sitting on my Windows box.
Right, so and many people do. So,
no
yeah. It's very similar,
you know. So it's if you want to get off the wild and ineffective update fiasco that Windows has been engaging in the last year, or if you just hear all the stuff where they're going to start charging a subscription, and you don't really want to pay that, you know, you get yourself to a point where you're comfortable. And if you're not, you can always tell it to set it up dual boot as long as you've got hard drive and memory capacity, and then you pick your flavor till you're comfortable with it. It's the thing put itself in perfectly. I was absolutely amazed.
Yeah,
and I was working on an HP laptop, which is about 5 years old, but it is an i7 processor with 12 gigs of RAM, it has a 1 terabyte hard drive in it, spinning disk, and when I got it all said and done, I looked at the hard drive. Check properties, and it was 917 gigabytes of space.
Yeah.
So with the Office program, with the browser, with the email client, with the operating system, I took up less than 10% of the drive capacity.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, Linux used to be a little bit more intimidating than I think it is now, and with the work that the folks at Mint have been doing, they've taken a lot of the intimidation out of this thing.
Excellent.
And the old-time Unix people are mad about that.
Yeah.
well, there's always the purists.
Command line.
Command line. No, it's just gooey garbage. Command line only.
Yeah. It's easy to use.
Language, I don't think I'd understand. It's going to take me a while to start understanding because if you're used to working in other areas, a lot of the names of programs or the names of the commands run counter to what you think they would be. I'm sure they made sense to the guy doing it at the time he did it, but given everything else, like Windows commands and things like that, and you start looking at certain commands, and it's like, that's not what that does, but that is in Linux, but not in DOS. So it's
right.
If you remember a lot of the old DOS commands, the problem with that is the words are the same, but the command is different.
Right, and one of the things that you have forgotten is that you didn't know any of that stuff when you started with Windows either.
I'm sorry?
One of the things you've forgotten is that you didn't know about any of that stuff when you started with Windows either. You started an operating system and knew nothing about the command line. You knew nothing about adding programs. You knew nothing about what was available. And you learned all of that. And you can learn all of that in Linux as well.
Yeah, but I was a lot younger and more flexible back
then. Yeah, there's that.
We won't go into that.
Yep.
All right.
That's a painful story for another day.
Yeah, all right. All right, thanks, Andy.
Anyhow, for people who are thinking about it, that's my story for what it's worth. And I, like I said, I didn't have a problem with it. And it as long as you don't get panicky, you just take your time, take a deep breath, and work your way through and read the commands and the questions in front of you and answer them, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Terrific. And enjoy your Linux. I think you'll find it's a lot of fun. Thanks, Andy. Bye-bye. Yeah, you'll find that changing operating systems is in some ways kind of a pain, and I admit that. But the reality is it's pretty easy to do, particularly these days, particularly depending on which version of Linux you're running. And it's easy and simple, and it works. And particularly, like Andy said, if you've got an older laptop that's just sitting around doing nothing, first you need to understand it's going to be a little slower. It's going to be, you know, you maybe have less RAM, slower hard drive, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not going to be as fast as your top-of-the-line Windows machine. But that's only because of the hardware you're running it on.
I remember the very first Mac, you know, 1984. The graphical interface was uncommon. No one knew how to use it. The Mac came with an audio tape. You would put in your tape player. It was called mousing around, and it showed you with an animation on screen when you heard the bing on the audio tape. You clicked the button on the screen, or hit return because no one knew how to click yet, and it would show you how to mouse around, how to move the mouse, what click meant, what double click meant, and it was so revolutionary at the time and made so much sense at the time. Of a graphical interface rather than needing to memorize all those commands. It was just funny. I still remember that mousing around audio tape. I probably have it one in the basement somewhere.
I bet you can find it on YouTube somewhere too.
Yeah, I was just looking.
Yeah. But yes, people had to learn how to use DOS. They had to learn how to use Windows. They had to learn how to use the Mac.
Yeah, before that, they wrote their own and wrote it the way they wanted to make it.
Right. So you can learn to run Linux just as easily, and it's not that hard, and it's not that much. It's really not that much different, particularly anymore. It's very much a common thing nowadays. So if you're looking to give it a try, of course, if you've got a Chromebook, you can already run Linux, and that makes it even easier. You just have to wait for it to install in the background while you do other things, but it'll eventually install, and you can then play around with it, do whatever you want. So.
They've made it user-friendly, and you don't have to be a programmer to do it all.
That's right. But you can if you want to, but of course you don't have to. I know many people who use it every day and never, ever go to the command line and never, ever, you know, do anything except install programs graphically and run them.
But knowing that you could is power.
Is power. That's exactly right. And knowing that nobody's ever going to charge you for more than you've already got, so... That's nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites right here on Member Supported. And thanks to you, we are Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Donuts.
You got it.
You're making me hungry.
And I waited in line for the good kind.
You did. You did. And we're appreciative of that.
Those look delicious. Anyways, you guys were talking last week about Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah.
You know, I know how good that program is. But I found another one made by IoBit called IoBit Uninstaller. And a couple key features I like that I wanted to tell you about that I like a little bit better than Revo. For one thing is once you install the uninstaller onto your system, it monitors every install that goes in, and it logs it. And it puts a shortcut up in the Windows uninstaller. So if you go to uninstall there, you have the option to use there. Instead of saying uninstall, it says use uninstaller. So there's a reminder there. And also, if you don't use it and use Windows, when it gets done doing the Windows install, it comes up on the screen and says, you forgot to remove some things here.
Oh, nice.
And it goes through and it shows you all the registry entries that it found that it didn't remove.
Very nice. Thanks. Oh. We'll take a look at that. I appreciate that. IOBIT uninstaller.
Yep, IOBIT uninstaller. It's a neat program. I've been using it for a while. It's doing a good job, so I figured I'd just remind you guys about it.
No, we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mark.
Yep, no problem.
Very nice.
Have a good one.
You too. Keep smiling. IOBIT uninstaller is at IOBIT.com. And it does look like it does much of that same stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Okay,
pretty cool. Of course, it's a Windows program. Windows all the way back to XP for those of you still running at 7 with a V word.
Yeah. I had a customer the other day that confused me. He was trying to sync his new phone with his computer, and iTunes requires that you be running under Windows 7 or later. And he said he's running under Windows. So, well, yeah. So you shouldn't have. No, I'm running under Windows 7.
Oh,
that's okay. You can be running under Windows 7. No, I have Vista. Oh, you're running before Windows 7.
Yeah, right. Less than Windows 7.
Less than Windows 7. Yeah.
And then you can't run it. It's that simple.
Yeah. So at least it wasn't that other OS that Dave doesn't like.
Yeah. We won't mention it because it'll start foaming at the mouth and
the
twitching. We don't need that.
No.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Ontario, New York. What's up, Jim?
I just wanted to call and mention that it wasn't for Francis, I wouldn't have found your website so long ago. And
nice.
Number two, your shirt, that is a good point.
Yeah, thank you very much. My shirt, for those of you who are not on YouTube, it's in script. It's in handwriting script. And it says, if you can read this, then you are old. And he's that's.
I've seen a few of those now that say, if you can read this, you're not social distancing.
Right, you're too close.
You're
exactly.
Too close, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, the.
Dave had a motorcycle jacket. And you know, if you can read this, she fell off.
Yeah. We will hasten to say that his wife bought that for him. So.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
If you can read this, she fell out.
Yeah. All right.
Well,
I
just got to jump in there, though. The one thing she did do after she got her own bike.
Yeah.
She got herself a shirt and set on the back. No, I didn't fall off. I got my own damn bike. And she purposely set it out. If we're going on a run, I would sit there and wear that one.
She'd wear the other one.
And she'd wear the other one. God love her.
Very nice.
That was Lori.
God love her. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rick from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've had some good success and bad with the trying to install Linux. I put it on an old Sony because I've got a lot of time on my hands now. And I was able to recover all kinds of pictures and stuff, and then it totally died. I could never get back to the hard drive. But my question is, I'm trying to put it on a Casario laptop, and I cannot get it to boot from the CD-ROM. Everything seems to be okay, but it just won't read it, no matter how much I move the boot order around. Do you have any suggestions?
First, you've set it up in the BIOS to boot from that drive, right? And what error message do you get?
Yeah, what happens is I set it up in that four choices, CD-ROM, built-in LAN, removable devices, or hard drive. So I put the CD-ROM to the top, and it sits there, and you can hear it sort of try. And I know the disk is good because it worked on the other computer, but it just won't come up.
Maybe the drive is bad. I'm fighting a 15-year-old Mac that the customer wants fixed now. Probably the drive has got dust on the lens or crud in the way.
Or it's out of
sync. Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of true, yeah. Sometimes you can help by blowing some compressed air into the drive slot to try to clean the lens off. There used to be, I don't know if there are anymore, CD lens cleaning kits. It was interesting. It was an actual CD that had a little tiny brush on it.
Yeah.
And
it would
brush the lens off.
The other thing you can do is instead of using a CD, build a USB drive.
That's what I'm trying to do now at the office.
Right.
But I got to get one that will work old enough on this computer. I had a 64 gig flash drive, and I think that's too big. So.
Yeah, yes.
I haven't had any success with flash drives. I tried making one, and then I found out that the two brands of flash drives I was using they're not bootable or something. I guess I could buy one, but I don't want to spend the money if it's just going to be not going to work.
It can be tricky making a bootable disk, and there's a program called Rufus.
I tried that, but
okay.
But I found out that the two flash drives I use, I got other ones now, but they wouldn't support it.
Right, and there are some older or let's just be honest, cheap flash drives that will not boot. So you do need, something less than the $5, more than the $5 one, but less than the $20 one, right?
Yeah.
So somewhere in the $10 range.
It's not just so simple as copying the CD to the flash drive?
No, because the CD is an ISO image, and what you have to do is essentially what Rufus does is unpack it and install the actual internal programs from the ISO onto the flash drive.
And the system files have to be in the right place, and the bootloader has to be in the right place.
And so. Rufus handles all of that for you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, I'll try to compress everything and, see how it goes. I got 50% success, so that's good.
Right. Sometimes, though, you can also, I would think that you could still get online. The old CD, like you were saying, the cleaning kits.
You can find one. Although that would probably cost about as much as a pre-built USB
right.
installer. Yeah.
The big thing is with the older the hard drive, the older the CD drive, you have two basic problems. One is that you might have dust on the lens, and compressed air will fix that. But the other is that that CD-ROM laser is on essentially a tone arm, if you're old enough to know what a tone arm is, and that can get knocked out of true over time.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 years is a lot of time.
Especially drives.
Right. So you may simply not be able to read a CD-ROM that was written on another device because those two arms are out of line with each other.
Trying to create a new CD with that drive.
And the CD material. There was good stuff, and there was cheap stuff, and some of that could also throw those arms out of alignment.
Right. Now, he did use that same CD to do another machine, so we know the CD itself is good, but it's good on that machine. Doesn't mean it's good on another machine.
Because it might be just in a line, just right.
Right.
The
other one was misaligned, but if you built it on that one, it'll read on that one. So I get it. Anyway, try Rufus and try a different... USB drive.
I was going to say, wait a minute. If he created it, you're saying, though, it was created on one machine, you try to put it on another?
Yeah.
Can you move that CD-ROM drive?
There you go.
Here's an idea.
Out of that machine and hook it up to this other machine that you're trying to read it from?
No, because one's a laptop and one's a desktop.
Yeah, okay. You could probably buy a case, but now by the time you spend that kind of money, you might as well just buy a USB drive that's already built with Linux in it.
I was wondering if you could just get a cable. Because a lot of them, you can get a cable.
If it's a SATA drive, then the cables would be probably the same. But a lot of times the laptop CD drives have a weird little tiny unified cable thingy.
Yeah, whether you can get a cable, though, that adaptive, usually they might be $5-$10 to go from that SATA to a USB.
The easiest thing to do is to try one of your other drives and use Rufus to create a USB bootable drive.
Okay, well, I'll probably try either get a flash drive to do it that way. They're pretty cheap.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Linux questions today. We like Linux questions. The big thing is getting it installed. As Andy said originally, you can buy either a CD or a thumb drive that's got Linux ready to be pre-installed. Just plug it in and go. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, set your BIOS up to boot from that medium and then plug it in and go. However you manage to get it installed, you'll find that once you've installed it, updating and even upgrading to the newest version is as easy, in fact, easier than Windows. There's a new thing coming to Windows called WinGet. And it is a command line installer exactly like Linux's.
So that's why they bought GitHub.
Exactly why they bought GitHub. So now you can say, just like you can say apt install such and so, you can now say WinGet install such and so. And of course, right now it seems to be only anything in the Microsoft Store. So it's basically Windows S.
But there's a repository already on SourceForge for it too.
Right, exactly. So they're building that up and pretty nice stuff, I got to say. So I think you'll find that as time goes on, Microsoft is realizing. In fact, I think one of the stories we have today is about that. Yeah, Microsoft said they were on the wrong side of history when it came to open source. They were against it for so long, and now they're embracing it.
And the internet.
And the internet. And
much cell phones.
Yep. So yep.
The only thing they got right was cheap PCs.
Yep. Exactly.
And selling a non-exclusive license to IBM.
Right. Right. And, of course, developers. Yep. But, yeah, so the reality is that open source has been around for, I don't know, 40 years now. And it's not going anywhere, and you're using much of it in your Chromebooks. You're using a lot of it in your phones. You're using it on your Macs. You're using it everywhere. Whether you know it or not, you're using it.
I had a paranoid customer was convinced someone was tapping her phone because every time she went into the Spotify about box, there was all of these weird companies she'd never heard of. That's all the open source stuff, and it says SourceForge, and it says GNU licensing, and she just didn't understand what it meant. How did those people get into my phone? When you installed Spotify,
right?
Spotify uses these codes.
Right.
Well, I didn't want them to. Well, then don't use Spotify.
It's really that simple.
In fact, don't use the computer.
Right. Right, because all of those things are open source licenses. Lots of places are. Microsoft is doing it more and more, and you can't. And probably 90% of the places you go on the internet are running Linux in the background or some open source somewhere along the line. So, you're definitely using open source. So congratulations. You're there already.
It's already a part of your life, whether you like it or not.
And like I said, I've been playing around a lot more with the Linux portion of my Chromebook. And I'm really impressed. It's a full-blown Linux. I'm quite impressed. There are a couple of things that I haven't tried to do yet, like replace the GUI. I don't even know if
not that adventurous yet.
Yeah, I don't know if that's possible, and I'm not even going to play with it. But I certainly, like I said, I'm running Thunderbird on my Chromebook. I can run pretty much any program that'll fit in. This particular machine has 8 gig of RAM, so I can run the GIMP. I can run all kinds of things. And do whatever I need to do. Audacity, so that I can do audio editing if I want to. Or, I can do all that online. There are lots of online sites to do video and audio and et cetera, et cetera. But I can also now do it right on my Chromebook because it has
Linux.
Because
of all the apps. Yeah, all the apps are there.
Yep. So because my Chromebook runs the Chrome apps, the Android apps, and the Linux apps, it has become really much, much, much more versatile than any other machine I own.
Yeah, we've got the same sort of thing on the Mac world. We've got the Mac apps, the Unix apps underneath it, and almost all the Linux apps run almost the same under Unix. And then, thank God for VirtualBox.
Yeah, exactly.
We can run most of the other OSs, too.
Right. And that's another thing. I actually was reading about Ubuntu 2004, I guess it is, 2004, just came out. And it's apparently much, much, much faster than it ever has been before due to a bunch of tweaking by about 300 people in the background. I'm interested in throwing it on a VirtualBox and seeing how it is, and maybe it's time to upgrade. I only run, there's two versions of Ubuntu. I run Ubuntu because that's just what I started with, and I'm used to it. It's inertia for me, just like for everybody else.
Yeah.
And there's two versions. There's the regular version, and then there's the LTS version, which is long-term support, which is what I tend to run on my main desktop. And the last LTS was 18, and so I'm still running that. And I think 20 is LTS as well. So I'll check to see if that's something I feel like upgrading to. But yeah, like I said, I've been running it for at least 25 years, and I don't really miss Windows at all. Oh, at all.
With the Chromebook, I have not.
Right.
You know, for doing a lot of the stuff that I want to do online and everything else, it's there and I can use it, and, you know, it does everything I want. You know, for my online banking or anything else. And, matter of fact, this past week, I wound up switching over, as I had an older password program, you know, for generating programs, and it was okay. It served its purpose, but I knew any. So I did try the NPass, and that is really sick. Slick. Interesting, though, to set up my other computers. You know, because you got to create the one account.
Right.
And then log the others in because they'd send you a code. So you'd have to put the code in so that you could register, because I got a number of different email addresses. But it is slick in putting everything in it, because now I've got it on my phone, two laptops, two tablets, and one, two, three, four computers.
And, of course, you can run the Android version on your Chromebook.
Yep. Yeah, I've already got it. Yeah, that's one of my two laptops.
And it's so handy to have that, to sync your passwords to your, especially your mobile devices, because there's nothing like trying to type a 27 mixed case up lower symbol
on a
phone keyboard.
That's one thing that ticked me off, though. Because, you know, I had a pretty good password on for my banking, which I thought, you know, it was pretty long.
Yeah.
And, I was going to have NPass just create another one. And, of course, it wanted to do, like, 47 characters.
Yeah, sure.
No problem. No.
No, your bank won't take it.
It'll only do up to 25.
That's just dumb.
So I just, in NPass, said, okay, you want to be that way? I dialed it down to 25 characters. Said, here. I says, yeah, it's okay. I said, well, that's got to be because,
The thing that I most have trouble with is, for example, I just set up Acorn TV on one of our TVs. And I let NPass create a 45 character password.
Squirrel.
Yes, squirrel. Acorn TV. I let it set up a 45 character password, which is great until you've got to type it into that stupid left, down, 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 45 characters in that. And of course, it's uppercase, lowercase numbers,
mixed letters, punctuation.
Yeah. No USB port.
What?
No USB port to plug the keyboard into?
Right, no.
On the Apple TV, if you also have an iPhone, it will pop up on there, and you can use your keyboard on your phone.
Well, I have a USB keyboard upstairs, a little portable one that folds into thirds, and I hadn't brought it down with me because I hadn't planned on putting Acorn TV on that television, and then there it was, and I thought, you know, by the time I go up and get it, bring it down, plug it in, set it up, I've already typed in the password, so what the heck. And I did, but it.
As I was going along,
I thought, yeah, you know what? ABC is probably a really good password for this.
That's where I've got, you know, that little keyboard for my Raspberry Pi.
Yep.
I just plug that in, turn it on. Oh, it sees it, and I can use it. It's a full keyboard. It's got a little mouse pad on top that I can move things around and everything else, and it's slick, you know, because, like you say, instead of using a mouse, which you can do, and traveling over here, down, shift to the numbers.
Right.
This way, it's all right there on that little, it looks like a game controller.
Yeah. No, I've seen those. Mine actually is from Jelly something, and it folds up into thirds, and it's got a full, it's a small but full keyboard,
yeah,
mouse pad, and number pad.
Yep.
So it's all there, and it's really nice, but it was upstairs, and I was downstairs, and that was one of the days when my arthritis was...
Yeah, it's
unhappy with me.
Yeah, I'll sit here comfortably and put
exactly.
it in. Heck with that. It's all the way upstairs. No, I get it. There's been
there are days.
I don't feel like going up and getting it.
There are days when I've gone up and down the stairs with no trouble at all. Yesterday was not one of those
Well,
days.
Right now, with this, like we were talking about before, the temperature's going up and down.
Yep.
And anybody with allergies or anything else is feeling our pain right now because... It's disgusting in the morning because you get all congested with all the pollen and everything else. And I've got two huge maple trees and all that dust and everything else is floating all over in the air and that. And it's like, oh, yeah, my sinuses are really liking that.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah, it's definitely verdant out there right now. So, yeah. Yeah, I woke up. Like I said, I woke up this morning, and I sat up, and I was fine for about 8 seconds, and then boom.
Yep,
I was done. It was quite a morning. Quite a morning. But yeah, so you can easily put Linux on either a virtual machine, or you can actually run it from a CD or a USB drive without. Installing it on your computer, except it will run very slowly because the connection speed to that is quite slow.
It can also be pretty easy to run on an older PC that you stop getting updates for or something like that, and then get a modern browser, modern email client, and everything working on the old computer.
Right, and it will be secure.
Yep.
All right, that music tells us you wasted an entire hour with this nonsense, but don't go away. We're going to do it all over again. Well, we're going to do it similarly, not all over again. Otherwise, we would have just recorded it and played it back. But we'll be back shortly with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And you'll connect with us on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here in the Truly Grateful... Truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported. It's all due to you, Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Mr. Francesco will be back with us just momentarily. He had to step out for a second. But I just want to remind you folks, we are here for another hour. Don't do like before. Past few weeks, a number of folks have been waiting until the last minute to call in with their questions. So if you've got a question, pick up the phone, give us a call, 966-5299. Or we take questions, as you know, if you text them on in. You can go to jazz901.org, put questions in there, or you can go to texting 209, that's 585, 209-9010. Or also you can call us toll-free if you're out of the area, 1-800-790-0415. It's been a while since I memorized and did all those. But, you know, don't wait to the last minute because we hate, you know, we're sitting around here and just chewing about whatever we want, Whereas if you folks have questions, you know, we gladly, you know, I've said for a couple decades now, the only dumb question is the one that you don't ask.
Yep. And then at 10 of, all the lines light up, and we know we're not going to get to all of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right. And there's just no way I can do it, folks. And I don't mean to be rude, crass, or anything else. You know, I just can't do it.
Can't do what we can't do.
Yeah.
All right, while you give us a call at the numbers Dave just said, by the way, those numbers are also on our website at soundbites.org in case you haven't gotten them written down. They're right in the upper right corner. I'll read the latest thing. This is...
We should speed dial.
See, we should be on speed dial. I have to say that this is quite timely to me because I got one of these emails this morning. Microsoft security intelligence team has warned that it is tracking a massive phishing campaign that attempts to install a remote access tool onto PCs by tricking users into opening email attachments containing malicious Excel 4.0 macros. Microsoft said the COVID-19 themed campaign started on May 12th and has so far used several hundreds of unique attachments. The emails being sent out claim to come from the Johns Hopkins Center bearing the title WHO COVID-19 Situation Report. If the recipient attempts to open the attached Excel files, it will open with a security warning and show a graph of supposed coronavirus cases in the U.S. But if allowed to run, the malicious Excel 4.0 macro also downloads and runs NetSupport Manager. While NetSupport Manager is a legitimate remote access tool, it's known for being abused by attackers to gain remote access to and run commands on compromised machines, Microsoft said. It connects to a command and control server, allowing attackers to send further commands. For several months now, we've been seeing a steady increase in the use of malicious Excel 4.0 macros in malware campaigns. In April, these Excel 4.0 campaigns jumped on the bandwagon and started using COVID-19 themed lures, said Microsoft's security intelligence team. The team, in a series of tweets, the team said that while hundreds of unique Excel files in this campaign use highly obfuscated formulas, all of them connect to the same URL to download the payload. This is not the only new security threat Microsoft's security team has spotted. It has also warned of a new TrickBot campaign launched on May 18th. It uses emails claiming to offer a personal coronavirus check, a variation of the free COVID-19 test seen in previous TrickBot spam runs. TrickBot remains one of the most common payloads in COVID-19-themed campaigns. So how wary are you of attachments? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, I saw that same one. And it's like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Because one problem, I don't use Excel.
Right.
I haven't had it on a machine in about 5 or 6 years. I do everything now in Google Docs.
Right. And I either use Google Docs or I use
Sheet.
I still have LibreOffice on my machine, but I've turned off running macros. So,
yeah,
that's safer.
Yet another reason not to open attachments in email.
Right. Yeah. I got two of them. One was the COVID-19 one. The other one basically just said very generic. Here is the invoice. Please check it for accuracy.
I get those a lot.
Yeah. No,
there's. I heard I'm someone
do it.
Someone coined a new term, disaster-tunity.
Oh, interesting.
Well, yeah. And so the bad guys are now jumping on. You know, click here to get your stimulus check. You know, click here to check for coronavirus. You know, every new disaster, there's a whole bunch of new fraud popping up.
Right.
All right, before we go to the phone, we do have a text question come in. It says, hey, guys, I missed the Linux package about which you're recounted his install with us. Think he used an optical drive. I'm still on 18.04.4 LTS. No problems.
Okay, great. Yes. I'm not sure I understand the question. But thank you. Yeah, I'm on 18 as well, and I won't move to 20 until it's been that was April, so it's been out a month. Usually a month is more than long enough for open source stuff to be vetted.
Yeah, if that makes sense to you, good luck.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're peachy. How are you?
Just a couple of comments about Linux. First off, I understand that the next version of Ubuntu is going to be 64-bit only.
I think the last couple have been 64-bit only, but yes. Yes, that's okay, true.
So that means it's not going to run on a lot of machines that are like Intel, the early Duo machines and things like that, which are a lot of things that, that you know, probably are gathering dust in people's closets and they may be trying to install Linux on to bring life back onto them.
Right, but there are a number of 32-bit Linux systems that you, Linux I, that you can run without a problem.
So anyway, my real question is this. Having lots of time on my hands, being self-isolated recently, I dug around in the closet and I found a pair of old compact Presario F700s that were running Windows Vista or something like that. So I said, well, time to bring them into the 21st century. So I wanted to put Linux Mint Cinnamon 19.3 on them. So I built a USB flash drive with all the installers on it, popped it into one, and it worked a treat. It's wonderful. A nice 1280 by 800 display, and it's, you know, breath of life. So I went to pop it into the other unit, and I get something that I call horizontally challenged. It's almost like the memory map to the video display is all screwed up with the default installation procedure for Cinnamon Mint. However, if I boot it from the USB drive in what they call compatibility mode, everything is hunky-dory. All right, fine. So I look at the two specs of the individual box, and they're just about identical. The only difference is the CPU. It's the same motherboard identifying number. It's the same video chip. It's the same memory. The BIOS settings are all the same, and they behave differently. Now, I'm willing to live with two machines that have got slightly different screen resolutions, but I'm just going to kind of raise this as a warning to folks who are going to Linux that sometimes it won't work quite out of the box.
Right, right.
You're going to need to kind of dig it out. Now, I have still not solved the issue of why high-resolution video works on one and not on the other, but I'm just sort of shaking my head, and I said, this is as close to identical as I've ever had for two machines, and one works and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, and it could be any one of 100,000 reasons, and I get that. One of the problems that many people had back in the day was that a run of machines would often use, particularly when they were lower-end machines or when the company itself was having a little trouble, they would buy batch lots of parts, and those batch lots might come from different places, and then you would end up with machines that were theoretically identical,
same
but
number,
in fact had different components.
Same number on the outside, but right. Different components on the inside.
Right. And there are a bunch of 32-bit versions of Linux that are still out there. Linux Lite, Ubuntu, Peppermint, Mint XFCE, Xubuntu, Zorin OS, Ubuntu Mate, Slax. So there's a lot of them out there that still work fine under 32-bit systems without any trouble.
Okay, but one of the things you might want to think about is devoting 5 minutes of your show or 10 minutes of your show every week to Linux on legacy hardware or something like that.
That's not a bad thought.
To help folks like us who are trying to breathe life into old machines again.
Yep.
That sounds like a good Ask Nick column.
Yeah. It does sound like a good, very good Ask Nick column, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So I may write that up for my newsletter. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I am doing my newsletter. It's at asknick.com. You can sign up for that. I still have the newsletter. We're no longer in the newspaper, but I'm still doing the newsletter online. And so far, I'm gratified to say it's been accepted. Nicely, so I'm very pleased.
We constantly plead with customers to replace their computers before the old one dies because it's so much easier. When the old one is dead, well, where's your backup? Oh, I didn't, but I don't have one. Or I have a backup drive, but I had one the other day. I have a backup drive, but the backup was 5 years old.
Right.
Well, can't you just get the data off my old computer? Depends on how badly it died. And yours
has, why it died.
Yours has a dead hard drive, so the answer is no. I'm sorry, no, we can't.
That's right. Why I'm putting it up on the cloud.
Just so you all know, one of the pages that I've put up on my website at AskNick.com is called Backing Up, and it's at AskNick.com/backup.php, and I list a number of, not every, for God's sake, so it's like the video chatting software.
I didn't have mine.
You're right, exactly. So your whole sheet is crap because you didn't have my one product.
Yeah.
But I put a bunch of them on there, and at the top I talk about a solution called pCloud. And it's a program that you install on your machine. What it does is you tell it, I want this or these multiple folders watched. And anytime you put a file into one of those folders, it gets backed up to the cloud.
Right. And you have to turn it on. We've had several people recently that got the cloud storage. They got the backup drive, never turned it on. And it's especially hard on phones. Because for many years now, all the data on phones is encrypted.
Right.
And if something goes wrong, you forget
your phone,
you forget your password or
drops it in the toilet or
recovery is virtually impossible because it's encrypted as a blob of noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that Steve Gibson term. Yeah. It's a blob of noise, and without your password, it's just a blob of noise.
And this pCloud is 500 gigabytes. For a one-time $175 charge. And if you want the 2-terabyte version, it's only $350 one time.
You sign up and get 10 gigs free.
And that's just, it's ridiculously cheap. Or you sign up for free and get 10 gigs. But it's ridiculously cheap. And so there's no longer an excuse for not having an online backup.
Lazy.
You know?
I'll get around to it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. My
drive won't die.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of those people who is adamant about multiple backups.
Mm-hmm.
As I say on my backup page, you don't have enough backups. You do not.
Well, that's why I've got, like I say, up to the cloud. And then I've got two other portable hard drives.
Yep.
They're both a terabyte. And I alternate backing them up to that, too. Even though I put the stuff up there on Google Docs and that. Yeah, no. If it's important to me, that I have nobody to blame but myself if I lose it.
That's right.
And I got a lot of stuff up there that I constantly am backing it up.
That's exactly right.
First, say like my banking stuff, I'll back because I use Quicken. I first back it up to both of those drives, and then. At least 3 times a week, back it up to the Google Drive.
Yep. So that's what I like about pCloud. If I save that file in a specific folder,
That'll do it.
It automatically backs it up instantly. Instantly.
What's that charge?
Like I said, $175 lifetime for 500 gig. Exactly. How do you not do that?
Well, it'll take some people to lose important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, then they'll pay for the price.
Yep. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Bob?
Are we having fun yet?
We're always having fun.
For various definitions of the word fun.
Talking about Bluetooth 20.04.
Right.
I created a VM on the same machine. I've got 18.04 and 16.04 running on it also. 20.04 is a market improvement over the 18.04.
Yeah. Yeah, it's much faster.
Yep.
And the way they did that was they looked at, I forget what they called it, cold spots? Some weird name, but basically they looked at where is it idling and what can we do with that time? And they tightened it up quite a bit, and it is a much faster operating system now.
So in my opinion, 18.04 was a dog to begin with. 16.04 is what I've been running in a VM, and now I'm migrating everything over to the 20.04 VM. It's that much faster.
Good for you.
Doing this. They did, of course, rearrange all the radio knobs and stuff, but I will.
Yeah, that's just keeping you on your toes, Bob. It's what keeps you young.
I just wanted to mention my experience with that in case anybody's thinking about what to try.
Perfect. Thanks, Bob.
Have a good day.
Don't forget the meeting in the beginning of June. It should be a good one.
Somebody put together a list of all the TV show appearances of Ubuntu.
Oh, nice.
From 2004. Veronica Mars was one of the earliest ones in 2004. Several in The Big Bang Theory, of course.
Oh, yes, of course.
Sheldon's preferred OS. So
right.
Even the doctor uses Ubuntu.
Sure. Sure, he's a freedom kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got, this afternoon is my day. I'm going to spool up a VM and throw 2004 on it, see how it works, and see if I want to move to my next operating system.
All right, we got another text message in. It says, hi, question about networks. My main router is 192.168.1.1. If I set up another router to my main router and give it the address of 192.168.2.1, will that isolate the two networks, keeping them totally separated?
Not exactly. I'll find it and post it in a minute. GRC has a list on a three-router configuration where you've got your main router that splits everything off into the two separate routers. Because you've got one router plugged into another router, that second router will be able to see everything that comes from the first router, unless it does have isolated ports. I'll find it in a second. There is a really great little Ubiquiti 5-port router where each port is isolated. Right. And that's the way to make sure that it is securely isolated.
And in fact, you can then set up a different set of addresses on each of those ports.
Yep.
And that's a better way to go because they're truly isolated as opposed to bridged one to the other.
And that's one thing I still love about that orb, trying to find stuff that's on. Because I had to do a reset, you know, when they were working in our area and things went down, come back up. So two of my Raspberry Pis got different addresses. So it's so easy with that orb just to quick go in, see attached devices. Oh, yeah, that's that one, and there's this one. Boom,
you can also, in the orb, set them to be static addresses so they don't ever change again.
Well, I did it with the one, but the other one, it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, so you can do that. Now, for that texter, if you have two separate incoming LAN connections or WAN connections, so, for example, two green lights or two spectrums or one spectrum, one green light or one front, whatever, you can then set up two entirely separate unconnected networks.
Totally separate.
But if they're both coming off of one router, then one will be able to see the other's traffic. So you need to either use the isolating router or have two separate incoming lines.
Now, a lot of modern routers can do a guest network with a separate range that is isolated.
Yeah.
Right, so you can do that. Again, yes, check your thing. If you have, they often just call it a guest network, and it can be separated entirely with its own set.
Control where it goes, what it has access to, even time limits on how long you want them connected, and the whole nine.
Right, and it can be 192.168.something or 10.something. Mm-hmm. So.
Or you can use a Raspberry Pi as the first router with two Ethernet lines.
Right.
Well, three, one in, two out.
Right, yeah. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matthew from Webster, New York. What's up, Matthew?
Hey, what's up, Nicholas? It's me, Matt. I just wanted to chime in and say I love your guys' program. It's a good show. I tune in every week.
Thank you, Matthew.
Last week, you guys were talking about like registry stuff on the things, and I know you guys like made the recommendation for what was the name of the program, the one that does good, that takes all the stuff out?
Revo Uninstaller Pro.
Okay. Well, I want to say this, too. And I use it on my cell phone, and people need to know about this also. It's called CCleaner. Okay?
Yep.
I get the app on my phone, and I have the app on my desktop. And it tends to work good, so I kind of like it. You know, it takes a lot of stuff out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I use it. I'm just trying to tell you and put the word out, put the message, you know? Yeah.
Excellent tip there. EC Cleaner is a great program. And, in fact, it's one of the programs I recommend in the Security Tango under the Windows Waltz. You'll find that C-Cleaner does a lot of really good stuff and does a lot of the things you need done. So, yeah, good tip.
All right. I just want to tell all the radio listeners, I hope everybody's doing safe out there. I care about everybody, and stay safe, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have fun.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, C-Cleaner is a good program, and there are really a number of them. Revo Uninstaller and IO Bit Uninstaller that Mark was talking about. So, you know, people know that, companies certainly know that the registry is a pain in the neck and a bad idea, and the way Microsoft has implemented is even worse, and certainly the way they've not really implemented removing any... programs from it. So, yeah, having a program like Revo Uninstaller, IO Bit Uninstaller, C-Cleaner, things like that are very useful.
All right, we got one we can probably squeeze in here before we go to break. I called about this a few weeks ago. I keep getting pop-ups with ads from PDFConverterGuru.com. I ran Security Tango several times to no avail. Any suggestions?
Don't go back to the website you're getting the ads from.
Well, yes, it is also possible that you may have, there's 100 things that the Security Tango doesn't really take care of anymore, and that's and one of those things is adding something directly in your browser, like a menu bar across the top. Many of those are nothing but spam generators. So if you've added a bar like to do. To check for viruses or whatever, try not deleting.
Uninstalling? Or not disabling?
Disabling.
Yeah.
All of those and see if that makes the problem go away.
And a lot of times the malware bytes and Super Nintendo spyware will find the underlying cause of those and remove them, but may not remove the bar itself.
Right, exactly right. So try those things. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's all about the bass.
It's all about the bass. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I am the Masked Avenger. I've been wanting to do that for 3 weeks. If you're not on YouTube, you have no idea what just happened. Anyway, welcome back. We're hurtling headlong in the last 30 minutes of Soundbites. And we have somebody on the line. I just have to get to the right tab. Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Good afternoon to all of you. I have a Linux printer question, but first I want to quickly say you had a text that was talking about 18.4, I think it was Ubuntu versus 20.4.
Right.
I think what the person is saying, because I ran into this problem, I tried 20.04, didn't go, I stepped back to put 18.04, I tried Distic, and it ran just fine, it loaded on just fine. So that's what I think the person is saying. Step back and wait and try 18, and then maybe try 20.04.1, and maybe it'll work then.
Yeah, I generally wait for the 0.1 release myself.
Yeah.
Don't okay. be the
pioneer. All right, what's your question?
My question is, okay, we're running MX Linux 19. We have a separate printer, separate scanner. Scanner is crapping out, so now we're looking at a potential replacement multifunction printer. I've looked around, and I can see we've kind of gone to a Xerox, a Brother, and an HP machines. Which of those would you rather prefer? I'm going to tell you right now, I kind of like the HP because, for one thing, through System Config Printer, and we have the current HPLIP drivers, it's a snap to install it. And from what I can see from the HP website, it'll cover completely everything. I should get everything that duplex printing, double-sided scanning, etc. But I think I've heard you say Brother is a pretty darn good machine. So what my wife would like to know, what would you favor between the two?
I think either one is fine. If you if you know that the HP driver does your business, HP still makes tanks. You can't kill them with a baseball bat.
Yeah, we sell all three brands, and we generally have found that Brother's often a little bit cheaper. The consumables are a little bit cheaper than HP, but they all work really great. It's just surprising how cheap printers are getting now. Color laser printer for under $200.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But yes, I do have a Brother, and I can do everything with a combination of Simple Scan and the printer driver to do duplexing and all of that stuff. But HP is excellent as well. I don't think you could go wrong with either one. I have not personally had experience with the Xerox printers, which is a sad thing for somebody living in Rochester to say, but it's true. But of the other two, I have had personal experience, and both are excellent. If you like HP, go with HP. You will not feel bad.
Yeah, especially because it makes it so easy. It's right there, rather than for me having to download the drivers and install it and go through all the command line to install the drivers on it.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's great. So thank you very much. And by the way, let's all remember what Memorial Day is really all about.
Yes, exactly right. Let me take this moment. I was going to do it at the end of the show, but let me take this moment right now from the bottom of our hearts, we thank all those who put their lives on the line to keep us safe and secure. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for your service. Thank Dave Enright for his service. Thank Shirley Ray for her service. And for all of you who served, God bless you and thank you.
Originally known as Decoration Day.
Right. I'm old. I know that.
Yeah. After the Civil War.
Yeah.
So you're that old?
I'm not that old. Dave, you just missed me thanking you for your service.
Oh, thank you, sir.
While you were busy. I like to thank him behind his back so he doesn't know I like him, actually.
I knew that about you.
Doggone
after it. 30 years?
After 30 years, you may have guessed it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Vic. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've got Kindle tablets and Samsung, and overwhelmingly, I like the Samsung much better, mainly because of the Google Play Store. Amazon has a lot of apps, but they suck, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I end up having to root my Kindle tablets so I could use the Play Store. And I end up putting on a CCleaner on my Kindle because there's nothing else I can use that I know of to clean it. Is that pretty much the best one out there, or is there something out there that's maybe a little more aggressive that will maybe do a little bit more, or should I just stick with the CCleaner?
CCleaner will clean what's there, but it's not an antivirus or anti-malware program. I tend to, for my Android software, I tend to use Lookout.
Yeah, I have Lookout on my Android phone. But I'm talking about on the Kindle tablets to clean out the junk.
In the Kindle OS.
Oh, in the Kindle OS. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you said that you had rooted it and put...
I did. I have the... I rooted them, and I end up putting the Google Play Store app on there. So I.
Oh, just the app. Yeah.
I couldn't get the CCleaner on Amazon, so I end up doing that. But is there a better cleaner that maybe cleans more than the CCleaner for that?
I haven't found one in the Kindle store, no.
What about on the Google Play? Because I've got it rooted so I can get any app that's that Google makes.
Well, like I said, a CCleaner does some things, but Lookout does others, and they complement each other.
Lookout, okay.
So yeah.
I put Lookout on the Kindle then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I never thought about that. Great. I'll do it right now then.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Yep. A lot of people have done that. The Kindle devices are very inexpensive, but they don't have a lot of the features that a standard Android tablet does.
It looks like Malware Bytes has a Kindle version.
Oh, there's a Kindle. Okay. So, Vic, there's a Kindle version of Malware Bytes. That would be excellent. That's a direct Kindle thing. It'll run right in the operating system, so that might actually be better for you. So give that a try. I have rooted a couple of my Kindles.
That was in 2015. Let me see if it's still available.
See if it's still available. I have rooted a couple of my Kindles, and they now run stock Android. So that's not easy, but it's doable. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hi, guys. A couple of things. Last week I had a problem with my printer not printing correctly, and some lines would print fully, other lines would be printing half. So I called, it's an HP printer, by the way, and I called HP support and talked to the tech there, and they went into my computer remotely, and they decided I had this Aileron Trojan virus type infection that was causing this problem. And I had checked my ink levels previously and they were full, and I was a little confused at why that would be a problem. So he suggested that I get a network for $150, I guess, through HP. However, I do have Norton 360 Standard Plus antivirus, which does come with a firewall, and I kind of question why I should have to buy another one if I already had one.
Windows has a built-in firewall that works better than most of them anyway.
Yes.
Let me ask you, let me back up a little, Jerry.
Are you sure you were talking to HP?
Yeah. Where did you get the number for HP support?
What was the number I used?
Yeah, where did you get that number?
I went on HP.com. And it came up with that. Actually, it came up with several different numbers, and I chose one of them.
All right, as long as you were on realhp.com, you're okay. But, yes, one of the things that that support does these days is sell you more stuff. And so if you're looking for a good firewall, the one in Windows is very good. Norton has its own, which is very good. If you're looking for antivirus, you've already got Norton. I'm not sure you need to buy another product from HP. If your printer's not printing well, it's either a corrupted driver, and reinstalling the driver should fix that if that's what it is.
Uninstall and reinstall.
Or it's your printer is dying, and that happens.
Well, here's what happened. Here's what I did. I did call, and I talked to the tech there, and he checked, and he said, do you have the firewall? So he went in and he did some adjustments in the settings, or had me do it, and we put in a full trust, network trust on this, I guess is what they call it, which I didn't have before, even though I thought I had paid for it. But anyway, I went and printed the document, and I printed it perfectly. So the only concern I have is, do I still have this Aileron Trojan infection in the system? Because the tech at HP said you'd have to get another network to correct that. And he suggested there's one for 2 years and 1 year and whatever. But he said, don't do any personal communication, like with financial information or personal ID information online.
Well, one of the problems is that Aileron is a rootkit Trojan. And so you can't clean it from your computer while you're booted from your computer. You have to take your hard drive and put it in a different computer, or have a known clean boot disk that you boot on your computer to do the cleaning with. It has nothing to do with a network. You need a different computer.
Right. Yeah. So what many people do is bring them to someone like Steve, and they do it for you because they pull the drive. Many people don't have the ability to do this themselves because they don't have enough extra machines. But what you need to do is pull the drive out of that machine, hook it up as the secondary drive on another machine, and let that machine clean it without booting it.
Yep. They actually found and arrested some of the people behind it.
Nice. So the point
that's
here, it's very unusual. So the point here is that's the reason you can't clean it. It needs to be the minute you boot up your machine, it activates and protects itself. So What you need to do is clean it on another machine where it is not the boot drive.
I see. Well, I guess the best thing to do would bring it into someone like Steve or someone like that to have it done.
Right. Any one of the many reputable dealers in town, there are a number of exceptionally good ones. So you should be fine once that gets done.
Okay. Well, thank you for the information. I was a little concerned that it was still on the system, which apparently it is.
Right. It probably is, yeah.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
All right. We did have another question come in. And from Mark in Greece, he's saying everybody should be warned. Microsoft is getting ready to put out a big update, the kind that has to save your files before it installs. Don't be a pioneer. Want to make that update.
Yep. Yeah, definitely back up everything you have now. This is the weekend to do it. If you want, buy pCloud, let it do it for you. Get it in at least three different places, somewhere in the cloud, somewhere off your machine, and then somewhere else on your network. So a thumb drive or external hard drive that you can detach, a network-attached drive, and
if it's important to you, take the time. Right now, with a lot of folks being home due to work or whatever, take the time. This is the perfect time. No excuse. Yeah, well, I'm too busy. No, if you're home and waiting to go back to work, the business hasn't opened up, take the time to do this. You'll thank yourself later down the road.
You can either do it yourself now, or you can pay somebody else to try desperately to retrieve your data later, and they may not be successful.
For thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, thousands
and
of dollars.
And have that wallet or checkbook ready because...
Yeah, there's a comma in that number, people.
Definitely.
So you want to be, And you know what really breaks my heart is the people who say, man, I've been listening to you say that for months. I keep meaning to do it. I just never got around to it. Now what do I do? Well, what you do is you live without the data you don't have anymore.
Yeah, especially.
That's what you do.
Invent a time machine, go back in time and do it before it failed.
Well, what always used to break my heart
and then
was,
destroy the time machine because those are evil.
Yeah. The folks that would be so upset. Because all those pictures were so important to me. I can't live without them. Well, you know what? Now you're going to have to. Because evidently it wasn't that important to you that you couldn't take the time to put it up on a backup storage or a cloud service. Cloud storage has been around for, a few years at least. I would, just...
Google Photos is free. And if you save it in the standard format, which is probably
higher than
your phone takes, it's free. And it's unlimited.
And especially if you're taking them with your phone now, it automatically goes up.
Right. If you've got the Photos app on your phone, whether it's a Windows, an Android phone or
an iPhone.
What about Windows Phone? Is there Google Photos for Windows Phone?
Yeah, there's nothing for Windows Phone anymore. But the fact is that you've got no excuse anymore for not having your photos backed up. You've no excuse for having your documents backed up anymore. I'm tired of hearing people say I meant to do it.
Yeah, well.
Do it. It's not because you're so busy right now. People are constantly complaining, I'm so bored. Start a backup, move on to something else. It'll happen while it's... What?
I didn't want to work. I just said I was bored.
You don't have to work. Once you've set it up, you set up something like pCloud, and you never have to think about it again as long as you live.
Think about... What was that one? I read it. I finally did that chore I've been putting off for 6 years. It took me 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I will have learned nothing.
You will have learned nothing. You're exactly right. And so... You know, we will always be sympathetic, but it's at some point, what we want to say is, you made that choice.
Mm-hmm.
You made the choice to not back up, and that choice led to where you are today.
And those photos that you say you couldn't live without, now you're going to have to.
Sometimes they're in tears.
I had one lady, she was literally in tears because she lost pictures of her mother and her father. And it was the last few that she had had. And I guess she had to scrounge those up from a relative. And she says, I am so devastated. I can't live without them. like Steve has said before, you know, you send it out to Drive Savers, you're going to pay a flat fee, and there's no guarantee that they're going to get them back.
And that flat fee has a comma in it, so be careful.
Using our referral number, they'll waive the diagnostic charge.
That's very nice. That's very nice. But, yeah, so something like pCloud, something, any sort of backup that takes it off your machine so that it's somewhere else. And the more places you put it, the better, the safer you are. But you have to do it. And there's no, you know, it's a 10-minute chore. Like Steve just said, it's a 10-minute chore. And what you're saying is my 10 minutes, I'm so lazy that my 10 minutes is worth more than your 4 hours. But yeah, you're going to pay for that 4 hours.
Somebody just texted in, want to get it in before we have to leave. Saw the Linux install flash as part of its install. Is that a problem?
What?
It says, saw the that Linux installed flash as part of the install. Is that a problem?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, but if it's part of a standard install, no, it's not a problem.
I don't believe. No, well, no, there is still Adobe Flash for Debian 10.
Oh, Adobe Flash.
That's probably what he meant. Flash, you know, Adobe Flash versus a flash drive.
Right, right, right. Oh, if it's Adobe Flash, no, it's not a problem. You can always uninstall it, or you can just leave it. It's dead anyway.
And most websites aren't using Flash anymore anyway. Right. But every now and then, there's a game site that still requires
right.
Flash.
So if you don't need it, uninstall it. That's easy enough. But yeah, so I'm sorry. Yeah,
Adobe he said Flash. Yes, Adobe.
Yeah, Adobe Flash. Yeah, it's not really an issue when you can uninstall it. I've uninstalled it from my machines. I use a program whose name escapes me at the moment, but it's an Adobe Flash clone that's designed by the Ubuntu people that replaces Flash and doesn't have the security holes that Flash does. It doesn't do everything, but it does enough for what I use.
Ent?
No.
No.
I don't remember what
HTML5 has basically replaced Flash. And
right. These days, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
All right. That music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank all of you, particularly those of you who did not call in at the absolute last minute. It always is. We said at the top of the show, it hurts us when we can't get to all the calls. Thank you for calling earlier this week. Please, again, let us thank each and every person who has put their lives on the line to keep us safe and secure. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for your service and your bravery. We honor you today, and we should do it every day. We will see you next week. Be good to one another. This is the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here in the truly great and grateful to you that we're member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.